and welcome to the Vicar's Watch Dibley,
the podcast where three priests link our stories to those of the Reverend Geraldine Granger and other TV vicars. I'm Kate.
I'm Jenny.
And I'm Ruthie. This episode, we are looking at the episode Vicar in White, which is the end of Geraldine's journey, and we see her wedding to Harry. You're back.
I know, I missed you all. So how are you guys doing? It's been a while. What is your life looking like? And also tell us something that you've been loving this week. Ruthie, Ruthie, you had the highlight of last ep. So Kate, why don't you kick us off? What have you been loving this week? How are you doing?
So it's been a really tough 2 months, if I'm honest, because I've just had quite a lot of death. Kind of at least one funeral burial bashes every week for 2 months, which I'm not complaining, you know, that it's the job, but it does get a little bit relentless. So I am really looking forward to, from Monday, I've got 2 weeks off and I've just got to do nothing.
Nice.
It's going to be wonderful.
That's glorious.
Sounds excellent. Mm. Are you going anywhere? Are you just going to bolt down at home?
I'm just going to bolt down at home, maybe take a few day trips. If I'm brave enough, I might try and find a beach, but that's quite a long journey.
Ooh.
So, maybe go to a garden centre instead.
Oh, that sounds like heaven.
Sounds very good. Yeah.
How about you, Ethan?
Well, I had an exciting trip down to London at the weekend because I went and preached at one of our friends' churches, and it was really good. It was mad rushing because I'd been at my nephew's birthday in Lancashire, he was 2, then went down to London to preach. And what was really lovely about it is I preached at a church where there were so many different heritages and ethnicities and just people from all these different cultures all in one building, and thinking it's been a long time since I've preached in a church with all this diversity of culture. Yeah, you have to think about it a lot harder and think about examples and what works and how to illustrate your sermon. But what was really, really lovely as well as part of it is when we were doing the Eucharistic prayer, well, Thomas was doing the Eucharistic prayer, there was the doors to the church were open and there was like a little hall next door where the kids were. And there was this kid who was probably about the same age as my toddler, so probably about 2 or 3, who was just stood at the door, like dancing, entranced by what was going on with communion. And it was so lovely to watch. That was a good thing. Oh, I enjoyed that very much. What about you, Jenny?
Yeah, mine sounds a bit boring. One of the things that weighs heavily on my mind is like not being a good enough eco-warrior. You know, like how there's a lot of stuff in the news at the moment and we've got lots of like goals and targets with like, I don't know, fossil fuels and oil and things. Well, I know it sounds a bit weird and maybe nerdy and slightly boring, but something I'm loving this week that's come as a total surprise is I've been finally able to install a smart meter. So I've been keeping a really close eye on like my energy usage and like just trying to turn things off and like being a bit more proactive and thoughtful about things. Now I realise it's a very tiny step, but actually, yeah, it's been something I've actually been loving. Able to go on holiday. I had a lovely week in Cornwall, so that was awesome. Henry was digging in the sand with my dog and playing in the waves. We had a super time. But also a smart meter. Yeah.
I love that the smart meter trumps holiday. Yeah. That's the thing you thought of before your holiday. Like,
I just keep the bar's going all up. The time. I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm like, what lights can we turn off now? But yeah, obviously, I'm thinking more widely about those issues a lot at the moment. Like in our own church, we're doing some stuff on it. But yeah, it's like a tiny little step in the right direction, it feels. So yeah, bring on the smart meters, baby.
Yeah, and actually, can I share a little win that I had this week as well? So I've been learning Welsh with an app which has a green bird as its as its mascot.
#notnad.
And that bird's name in Welsh, it has a Welsh name, which is Dewi Lingo. just love. Anyway, I've been asked by, assisted a family with funeral cremation a few months ago. They'd like some of the ashes to be buried at a family plot in Wales. And I understood the place name. I know that's like, that's a terrible, so the place is called Eglwys Celan. And Eglwys is the Welsh for church.
Church.
I probably mispronounced that wrongly, so Welsh speakers, please forgive me. I'm learning via an app, not actual conversation. So it's St. Elan's Church. I'm just really proud of myself.
Ah, there we go. You learn things on this podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. You got some more church words. Yeah. Shall we crack on with an episode?
Let's do it.
Woohoo! Today we're looking at the Vicar in White.
So we've waited around a little bit and we've procrastinated just because we like talking to each other. We're actually going to talk about Vicar of Dibley episode today, and some of you might have been a little bit frustrated that we did Handsome Stranger and then we've had two episodes not doing the next one. So now we're finally talking about the Vicar in White, and I think one of the reasons we've been putting this off is because it's a bit bittersweet for us, because this is one of the last Vicar of Dibley episodes we might talk about. But today we're going to talk about Geraldine's fully happy ending and her marriage to Harry.
Yeah, so we start off in the parish council, and there's David and there's Jim in the room, and they're all in a bit of a reminiscing mood, and starting off straight away with a ministry thing. I think there's the slight suggestion that maybe Jim has dementia at this point, because David makes the comment about you don't remember much, but at the moment, do you? But Jim says he remembers the kind of early things in life. And that's often the story of people with dementia, that they'll remember early things. And for Jim, it's a lot of snogging that he remembers. But the more recent things he struggles to remember.
Yeah. And I think, well, Jim himself has gone through a journey as a character. And I was saying, before we were recording, I said one of the things I did after watching this episode was I watched on the DVD, there was a The Story of Dibley documentary, and they actually talked about Jim and how his character changed, and at some point his wife just disappears, and his character becomes a little bit more focused on his Lothario nature. And it's just interesting that Jim has had actually quite, it's a quiet development, but he has had development. But I think it's a very familiar conversation to me, that thinking back to a rural heyday, in the area I live in and some of the people I visit, you hear very similar stories, not quite on the level of Jim's, of snogging every child of a family in the fields. But, you know...
Whilst a child, can we just make that clear?
Whilst a child. Oh, yeah. whilst also a child. But the kind of stories about working in the fields and how they met each other. And, you know, I did one funeral and they were talking about how a couple met, and she was walking, you know, through the village to post a letter, her weekly letter to her sister. And he was digging a trench in a nearby field, and he catcalled her and she quite liked it. So she started posting a letter every day. And it's just... You know, it's just, there's something about English rural life of 50 years ago, which, I mean, it doesn't really exist now. But you can see how it's very easily romanticised.
Which is what David's doing, and they're talking about life before the vicar and life with the vicar, and eventually all the parish council comes in apart from Geraldine, who's not there yet, and they say it's understandable why she might not be here. But then Geraldine walks in singing. What does she sing, Jenny?
I'm getting married in the morning. Can I just say about that song, actually, I've been watching this episode, and would heartily recommend it to you, dear listener, to watch as well. I've watched it so many times, and I've actually been a bit scared about the impact that this episode has had on my actual real life. So the night before I got married, when I was watching this, it brought all the memes back, On the way to my accommodation the night before I got married, I insisted that everybody with me, which is like my mum and my sister, so not like a massive troop, we were all singing this song. I got such a clear memory of like strolling down to our accommodation where our reception was going to be, like in the like nighttime stars, going, "We're getting married in the morning, ding dong, bells are gone," and I was like, "I've got to sing that song because that's like the song of, you know, before you get married." And it was like, it was copying Geraldine, and I was like, "Whoa!" And there's stuff later on that I was like, I insisted on doing that because Geraldine did that in this episode. Just had no idea until I watched it back. I was like, "Oh my goodness!" But yeah, I loved it.
Okay, well, say the song actually confused me because it made me think that she was actually getting married in the morning, and this was the day before she got married. Yeah. And I was gonna say, like, is this her hen do?
Yeah.
Is she going to parish council as her hen do?
Oh, yeah. What a hen do. That would be interesting. Yeah. But they try to get on with business, don't they? And they keep getting interrupted by, well, she sings Shakira, doesn't she? And pops open a giant bottle of something fizzy and delicious.
How big is that bottle? It's amazing.
Big enough. The plan is that they're getting married at Christmas, aren't they? Because they planned that in the previous episode when Geraldine thought it was going to be someone else. So they've stuck with Christmas. It's a bit of an odd time for clergy people to get married at, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I probably wouldn't encourage anyone to get married at Christmas because it's quite a busy time of year. I mean, if there were very clear pastoral reasons why a couple wanted to get married at Christmas, of course I'd go along with it, but they may not get my full attention in the same way.
Do you mean Christmas as in, like, just to clarify, in the kind of season of December, or do you mean, the like, around, of... technically, the 20th, like, the 25th kind of thing?
On the 25th, get married that day.
I think you're not allowed to, actually. There are some days that you're not allowed to get married.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Easter Day is one of them. I think Christmas Day probably
day
is.
Before Easter, Holy Saturday, you're not supposed to get married.
Yeah. Good
no
Friday.
Supplements
oh,
at
really?
All. Yeah.
Oh, I'm doing a funeral next week for a gentleman. I did the funeral for his wife the year before, and they got married on Easter Saturday.
Scandalous.
Yeah. Maybe... Which also, the year they got married happened to be April Fool's Day.
That's quite sweet.
But I have been to a clergy couple wedding in December. Ooh. And it was like 22nd or something like that. It was late on in December. But it was lovely in lots of ways because they had, after the service, they had mulled wine and mince pies. And I'm
that's
nice. Brilliant. I'd love that. So I can see the appeal of getting married around Christmas time. But if you are a clergy person, I can also see why that would be very stressful.
Well, because it also means that any post-wedding holiday you have might not be able to happen until later. Unless you find cover.
No, that's the thing. In a way, I think it's really smart to get married around Christmas because then you, like, especially if it's, like, I don't know, kind of halfway through Advent, because then you're like, "Hey, see you later, bye, everybody." And everyone's like, "Yeah, go, enjoy your honeymoon. Like, we'll cover things here. We'll get some fixtures in, don't worry."
Well, someone here managed to have a baby around Christmas. So when we did work out the date, we both of us went, "Oh no, that was really terrible planning." Not that you can always plan it like that. We went, "Okay, we've messed up there." But it did mean that we both got a Christmas off because we were both on parental leave.
That's brilliant. Isn't that sad? Sneaky. We like have to plan our major life events around when we've been like, "Oh, just have a break, get a busy season."
Okay. If we have another one, we'll think about, oh, we start 9-10 months before Easter.
Yeah.
We'll get Easter off.
Yeah. But then, so I've already mentioned Jim's growth or character development in this scene. Can we just give a huge shout out for David? And particularly when he's reminiscing at the start and talking about, you know, he talks about, oh, those songs about songs of praise service and those lovely animal services and when the vicar replaced the church window with clear glass. And he says it all so positively, whereas I distinctly remember in the actual moment he wasn't quite so happy about any of this. Mm. But also, I think for me, this was so touching because we open the episode with Gary Wardhorn and Trevor Peacock, with David and Jim talking. and Gary Walton and Trevor Peacock have now both passed away. Mm. So it was a very, for me, it was a very touching scene.
Yeah, it's, yeah, you do watch them now and go, gosh, if this was like a real life parish and going, you would have done the funerals for these various people now. Mm. But yeah. And on a total swing to something different, that we have Geraldine celebrating and she decides to leave the meeting early because she says very explicitly she's left her fiancé in bed and was planning to return to him earlier. So if you think back to the episode with Simon and that they all seemed upset that she was having sex before marriage, they seem fine with it this time. So actually was the issue more the secrecy as opposed to their having sex before marriage?
I think it might be more the commitment level.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Because it's her fiancé and they are imminently getting married. Yeah. Like, I know my mum said to me when I was a teenager, you know, sex before... I'm paraphrasing, but sex before marriage happens, just... try to make sure it's with someone you're committed to and hopefully the person you're going to marry.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
You okay? Yeah. Sorry, it's just started raining. And because my microphone's turned up, you're going to get an interesting background track.
It's all right. It'll work out.
On that note, though, I am surprised that if she was going to head back to home to be with Harry, potentially in a snuggly way, why didn't she take two glasses of champagne? She only takes one!
Oh, we know she's got more of those bottles at her throat. I mean, come on, it's Geraldine.
I was going to say,
outrageous.
Because at that stage, I was like, oh, is she getting married tomorrow? I was like, you definitely need a Prosecco the night before you get married anyway. Like you say, Kate, I'm sure she's got plenty at home. Yeah.
In my head, this is how it happened. Harry, I think she was talking to Harry before the meeting about, oh, I've got to go to this meeting and I really don't want to leave you. And he said, and I think he's brought these bottles from London, right? And he says, tell you what,
oh,
go,
my gosh,
give them this bottle and then come back. Like, I think that's what's happened.
That's
like,
so really sweet. I love how your
he set the boundary for her.
Yeah.
That's really sweet.
And then in the next scene, we get a bit of a hint at their relationship and they're talking about marriage and they're talking about the wedding and planning their wedding list. And Geraldine has some interesting suggestions for what she might, where they might have a wedding list for. Where did you go, Jenny? Did you go John Lewis?
No, we didn't. We actually said, well, because my husband and I both kind of had lived separately for a long time, I kind of had everything that we needed, although there were a few bits we wanted to go for. So we said, if anyone wants to give us a gift, although please just come along and be part of the day, could you contribute towards our honeymoon? Because we wanted to go and have a crazy old time in Greece, which we did. So we actually said, if anyone wants to give, then that would be a beautiful thing, but no pressure, just come along and have some fun. But it's nice. I know, I loved, because Geraldine said, if we don't make a list, everyone's going to buy us Bibles. And then, what'd you say? Her uncle is going to give her a dildo as well. A bit cheeky.
Yes.
And I was like, oh dear. But that is always the danger. But then, also, people are going to just do what people are going to do, aren't they? Like, if they're going to buy your Bibles and read things, then let it be so.
So, I watched this episode on Catch Up on Gold or something like that, because I realised I left the DVD at my in-laws' house from last time I watched it, because I was away at their house.
Oh no.
And so they cut out the line about the dildo
what did they do instead?
They just cut it. So that whole bit was saying when Harry says about, shall we just let people get stuff? And then she says, right, tonight's the night I'm going to do my looking through wedding things. It just cuts it.
Oh, really? She doesn't even say the bit about Bibles.
And that's really sad, because this is one of my favourite parts of the episode where...
It's hilarious. I was looking forward to it. And then I'm like, where's the bit with the dildo? Anyway.
But then also because it just is this beautiful insight into their relationship where Geraldine says, is essentially saying we should probably do something worthy for our wedding list, you know, give to charity. And then Harry just speaks the truth of, you deserve to be spoiled. And, you know, for this one time, you deserve to actually.
That's really sweet.
And what I really like is in their dynamic, he's allowing her not to be, quote unquote, holy in that performative sense and just be herself, and he's a balance for her. And I wonder if there's a conversation to be had about, I'd really love if we could talk at some point to someone who's married, a vicar who is married to a non-Christian. And just, I wonder if that's a common dynamic. And I don't know.
Hold on, this, but... does that mean that you don't think, oh yeah, because Harry's not really a Christian?
He's not, he's not a churchgoer anyway.
Anyway, he says the Bible's a bit far-fetched, doesn't he?
Yeah, he thinks the Bible's a bit far-fetched.
But maybe he might have changed since going to church with Geraldine.
But he doesn't, because he works in London on the weekends.
Oh, yeah.
I'll find out.
But, so I think it's an interesting thing to reflect on.
Yeah.
In their dynamic. After we've had this lovely little interaction about the wedding list, we move on to Geraldine wanting to plan the wedding, and she gets rid of Harry, he goes off to the pub, but she says, I've spent the last decade planning other people's weddings, and now I can plan my own. So my question for all of us, for you two who are already married and me who's not married, is how much did, or for my case, do you think about your own wedding while you're planning other people's weddings? Because I'll admit that I do, just occasionally, as I'm planning weddings with people, I think, oh, if I would do it like this, I would do it like that.
Yeah.
Did you do the same?
Yes, I think so. In that, so the liturgy was really important for us, and so worked really hard at that and thinking about how we wanted to do that. And I thought about the weddings that I'd been to a lot more, because I hadn't done lots of weddings before I got married, and just knew that I wanted it to be fun. And just to have lots of fun as part of the day, and wanted like the fun, quirky things that were part of it as well. And knew I wanted to include our church families as part of that, because they've been really key in our relationship too. So that, yeah, it definitely had influences as to what we did. How about you, Jenny?
Yeah, I'd say maybe probably like not at the time, because I think I was, yeah, like obviously... your mindset's in a different place. But I think when it came to planning my own, I did reflect on, yeah, what other people had done and what worked well and what felt like us. But yeah, at the time, I think probably not, but since then. But it's interesting, again, you know how I was saying, I sang that song of, oh, I'm getting married in the morning. Well, just like that, when I first got engaged and came home, in my head, I was like, right, I need to do what Geraldine does. I need to get out all the magazines, pour myself a big glass of wine, get my box out about wedding stuff and be like, okay, let's chat, let's do this. And absolutely. Again, when I watched back the episode, I was like, oh my goodness, I've been so heavily influenced by this. Like my best friend, the next time I saw her, we went and told her that we'd got engaged. She was like, ah! And then the next time I saw her, she came with like a bundle of magazines and was like, it's time. And it's like, yeah, it's just so sweet. But also like, it did make me chuckle about the influence. It was so great. But I guess you kind of build a picture of what you want, don't you, as time goes on.
People ask questions as well about vicars getting married and about the, you know, the cost of weddings and do you get mates rates and things like that? And did you have to pay for your wedding? And we definitely did, I think, pay for our wedding.
Yeah, because we paid for ours as well.
If other people have to, then so should we. But there has been some discussion at Synod, which is our kind of, Ross explained it on our episode recently. It's where they decide the important stuff, or they just sit and get grumpy about doing free weddings, isn't there?
Yeah, so it's proposed by the Diocese of Blackburn to trial doing weddings for free or a minimal cost through the church. So obviously that doesn't include all the other extras that when you're planning a wedding you might want, so things like your dress and flowers and everything, but the church part of the service of the day would be free. And this is because at the moment people getting married are disproportionately higher income from a higher income background, and if you earn less than 20k a year, you're less likely to get married, according to some research. So the idea is, well, maybe if we believe as a church that marriage is a gift from God, we should be offering marriage for free.
I think a very valid counterpoint to that is, in which case we should also be offering marriage equality for everyone.
Yes.
And probably free funerals as well.
Yeah,
like, our baptisms are free already, but, like, if we're going to say that about...
Funerals are free if it's under 18.
Yeah, and you can waive wedding fees as well for pastoral reasons. I think one of the arguments is that that's quite an exclusionary way to do it. You
have to
and puts people off. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the trial goes anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Talking about free stuff, actually, I've just remembered that our bell ringers did ring the bells at our wedding for free, which I was actually really touched by. I feel like that's a kind of bit of a dibbly thing, isn't it? Being like, send our vicar off in style.
So Geraldine's sat there, she's planning her wedding and drinking her wine, is all excited, reading her magazines. Yeah. And of course the door goes.
No.
And she goes up to the door and it's David, and she starts to say, I'm really sorry, I'm busy, but he marches in. And I'm like, yay, Geraldine for growth, but boo for boundaries. And as she puts it, the whole asylum turns up and explains what their wedding gift for her is going to be. And the wedding gift is going to be her wedding. They are going to plan everything and she will get no say in it whatsoever. And it is like the most disaster pitching for who does what job. And yeah, they're going to do the wedding. And I want to know why David thought this was a good idea.
Okay, so I think I can see, I don't agree with this logic, but I can see the logic that Geraldine spends her life planning other people's weddings. So therefore, we want to relieve her of the work so that she can just enjoy the wedding rather than thinking about the work side of it. I disagree with this, because I think if you plan people's weddings or funerals or baptisms or anything for anyone else, you're always thinking about what you would want. So frankly speaking, Geraldine probably already has her wedding planned. Like, it's probably already planned at this point. She's just picking up the final details.
Yes, but David, I feel like, has got enough brain on him to go, this would be a lovely idea, but actually, as a community, our execution of it would be interesting, shall we put.
Well, maybe he wants, because Hugo says it's supposed to be the most stressful time for a couple. So maybe it really does come from a good place that they want to take away that stress.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Definitely does. It's just a really bad idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that the character of David is aware of how eccentric everyone in the village is.
Yeah.
So he will be aware of how the wedding will turn out. It's interesting that he doesn't say, my job is going to be to make sure that everyone keeps within boundaries.
His job is to do something the night before or whatever it is. And you're like, that's a really rubbish job, David. You'd be so much better as like wedding coordinator to make sure it's not completely nuts.
Step up, Big
but
D.
The fact that he just gives Alice free reign. But I wonder if he's been living with Alice now for quite a while. There's 13 children. He's living in, I imagine that his home situation has worn him down a little bit, so maybe his threshold for what is beyond lines of being acceptable has shifted.
Yeah, well, we've said, haven't we, in terms of his character growth, there's a lot of development. Maybe he's getting, you know, more softer and more optimistic in his
more
senior years.
More eccentric himself.
And maybe he believes in the villagers as well. Maybe he thinks, actually, let's do this. What a treat. We can make it really special. And to be fair, not to skip ahead, but I think there is success there. Anyway, let's not race ahead. Sorry, my sisters.
Yes.
I think maybe it's a testament to his opinion of Geraldine that he in his head image of Geraldine, she loves all of these people despite their quirks. And therefore she will love anything.
I think that's true.
That's David's image and imagining, I think, of Geraldine, which is actually quite sweet. I think it's not entirely accurate, but
There's Yeah, then they're talking about why they want to do this, and and Hugo makes this comment about, we know that once you're married, you won't stay here long, which I thought was a really interesting thing he said, because it was definitely in my experience that actually when I told my training incumbent that I was getting engaged, the first thing he said was, so am I losing you then? And just the assumption was that because I was a lady, am a lady, let's make that clear, because I'm a woman, that I would therefore move on and go somewhere different because of that. And I, yeah, that just stung back and going, why was that assumption made?
Really interesting.
It's quite sad that they are making this assumption, and it feels like quite, I don't like this as a statement, because it's not ever really challenged in the episode either. It's sort of just generally accepted that, yeah, Geraldine's at the very least going to see less of them, or be less committed to them. I think later on David says something about how for 10 years we had 100% of your attention. And now that's going to change. And I want to challenge that, because I think, so yes, being in a relationship and having a spouse means that you have additional priorities in your life. But frankly, as a single person, you also have priorities and other personal attentions. And I don't think, if I get married, I don't think that will change my commitment to my parishes.
Yeah.
At all.
Your priorities might change, but you're still committed.
Yeah.
And it just implies that as a single person, she had no other life outside of the parish, which it might be the case for Geraldine, but that's not to assume the case for everyone else.
Yeah. And I just want to say, you know what? Geraldine, after getting married to Harry, is going to continue to be an incredible vicar, and I really dislike... Yeah. I know that this, for the narrative arc of the whole of the show, this is meant to be the farewell, for us as the viewer saying farewell to Geraldine. But it's not a farewell, because she's getting married. She's not leaving. She's not retiring. We know from later comic relief specials, she continues to be in Dibley right until this day. And she continues to be a stonking great priest. If anything, Harry will make her a better priest.
Absolutely.
This is the episode we needed when The Vicar in White was first published, and when women across the land worked out should they go forward for ordination and would marriage ever be a blocker. Because again, I think the subliminal impact of this episode, and being totally honest here, when I was getting ready to be married, I was going through these same things as well. I was kind of mourning and grieving the fact that things would be so different and I wouldn't have as much time as I did before and my parish wouldn't be my number one priority. Honestly, that is how I felt. As we know, the Vicar of Dibley has had a very big impact. But it hasn't been the case at all. And everything you've just said, I'm like, oh, yes, I wish I could have bottled that up and heard it before. Because I almost did some sort of pre-grieving before marriage. And I think that's another reason why many young women who haven't yet been married or who aren't in relationships say, oh, can you be a vicar and can you be married? It's such a big thing. But I think this episode rides, it kind of surfs the wave of Geraldine's marriage as a reason to say goodbye, which is an unhelpful blending, really, of those two things. It needs something in order to close the series down, and it uses her marriage as a kind of instrument to do that. But the truth is that that's, of course, not the case. And you're right that Geraldine goes on to have a wonderful ministry. And so do, human beings who get married. It's not a death. It's a... Yeah.
So if you are single and you are discerning a call to ordination, and you are worried that being single means either you will never be able to get married, or that if you get married, you will have to sacrifice your calling, know that that is a false choice that is being presented to you. It's not the case at all. And as much as this Vicar of Dibley episode reinforces that false choice,
it's not the case, because God has called you, and God knows the whole trajectory of what your life may be, and God has it in hand.
Amen. Yeah. God will fettle it, as it says on my wall. God will fettle it.
So, yeah, just follow where you're being led, whether that's to ordination or to a much better calling. serving God in so many different ways, because I think we do need to say, you know, we are vicars talking about a TV vicar. So for us, calling is very specifically about being ordained to the ministry, but calling, you know, we all have callings in our lives to so many different things.
Absolutely. Yeah. So shall we hear some of the wedding plans that are being done? We start to see what they're doing and we go to the vestry, and Jim has been working on an absolute banger of a tune. It's a great song, but it's all about divorce, which seems an interesting choice for weddings. When we're doing wedding prep, well, Kate, you brought up an interesting question when we were talking about what we'd talk about.
So something I've been mulling over, and I really don't know where I land with it, is whether at all you ever mention the possibility of an end of a relationship to a couple who are approaching a lifelong commitment. And that's not saying, oh, actually, you shouldn't get married and you should break up. Like, that's not what I mean. And that's what I mean is that helping a couple find their resources while they are still happy together to work through conflict that may end their relationship, so that if their relationship ever does end, it will end amicably. And they'll know it's actually that it's ending for the right reason, not just because they're giving up, actually, that their marriage is ending because for the valid reasons. I think that's what I mean. I think there are reasons to get divorced, but there are also times when actually you can work through conflict. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, I think there's it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think talking about conflict is a really important thing, because you're going to fall out over stuff, and whether actually as a couple you have full-blown arguments or whether you just disagree on things, and however that might look, you are going to disagree about stuff. And I think we've said previously about one of the important things that you should, well, a couple of the important things you should talk about before you get married is money and children. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, if you've got kids already, do you want to have more? How's it going to work if it's a blended family? What about money? How are you going to do accounts? Because those are the things that you'll fall out about. And I think it's really important to talk about conflict. Whether I talk about if the relationship ends in marriage prep, I'm not sure I would, but I would definitely talk about disagreements as part of it.
I think one thing I've done, rather than actually talking in marriage prep about, you know, what are the right reasons for divorce and what are things to work through, I've been working on a series of questions based on something another couple have given me about saying, oh, we found these really helpful to talk about on our date nights. And one of the sections is about conflict, but also kind of saying, what are our deal breakers? And how do we know when things aren't working out? And that's not something I think I would talk to a couple about. But it's encouraging that that awareness, that self-awareness in their relationship of what does healthy look like and what is unhealthy and what can be worked on and what actually is a deal breaker.
Yeah,
I think that's why, as you've said, like, conflict is good to talk about, but expectations, and you've listed, like, obviously, like, children stuff, finance stuff, but expectations of each other, I think, is something really important. But again, maybe I'm just shy, but I encourage my couple to take the prep away with them. So I'm like, go and have a day night, here's your question booklet, here's some topics, here's some fun. They've got, like, you know, slide, you sort of put yourself on a between two points, you know, like in terms of I go on holiday, I want to A, relax and chill, or B, plan everything and go and tour. Do you know what I mean? It's like those sort of fun questions. I do love them, to be fair. They're really fun. But interwoven in that is kind of what are our expectations of marriage when it comes to sex and family and holidays and all that kind of stuff, which is really important to talk about. But I think that there's a really important thing with marriage, that if you're going into it ever thinking that divorce is an option, then you probably need to halt the process and take a bit more time. Because I think that, you know, a lot in the marriage service itself, like if you think in the preface, it speaks about like this is, you know, we're not doing this lightly or selfishly. Mm. It's supposed to be doing, you know, reverently and responsibly. And it's a commitment for life. And I think, yes, yeah, okay, the reality is that divorce may come up with some of our couples because they may be marrying again for the second time or the third time or more sometimes. So that's an avenue to talk about it. But I think, yeah, I think for me, it feels really important that the couple know that actually divorce isn't like, oh, I'm really unhappy, therefore we're going to divorce. Like, divorce is there as, a way out for people who are in marriages that cannot go on for very, very, like, serious reasons or for, of where there's abuse or neglect, rather than, like, kind of conflict that's resolvable.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what I say is marriage should never be entered into lightly and should never be ended lightly. That you know, I try to not say it explicitly, but as you said, there are reasons, really good reasons, why a marriage needs to end. In cases where it's a very toxic relationship in our environment, where it's not safe for either of them.
Oh, yeah. But I think where it's
actually actively making each of their lives worse for any reason. But we want to, at the same time, it's a challenge of the modern age. I'm not necessarily sure it's a bad thing in the modern age that people don't just stick in relationships when they're not happy.
No.
And you're right, we shouldn't let people think that divorce is just an easy way out, because divorce is never easy.
No.
So yeah, it's just a sort of, do we ever mention the D word when people are getting married? Because obviously Jim and Owen are singing about divorce at a wedding. It's like, as I said when we started this conversation, I've been mulling it over and I really don't know where I land. Just try to sensitively work with couples to have the resources themselves and to know themselves and know their relationship.
I think that's why prep is a really good thing, because it's really, if you were going to talk about divorce, it's like, I think it should be a thing where you have to be absolutely confident that your partner isn't going to be toxic towards you, that, you know, you can trust that you will have each other's backs, that you will love, honour, comfort, protect each other no matter what. That's what you promise. So actually, if anything, the prep should bring out, and like the conversations, and hopefully the Vixter will pick up between the couple if there is stuff. I mean, again, very light touch, really. It's for the couple to work out in each other, that hopefully they're in a place where they are confident that the other person will, you know, do those things, love, comfort, honour, protect, that, you know, and that going forward they can trust them. I think that's the only grounds you can go forward for marriage. Otherwise it doesn't make sense. If you're worried that, you know, or you think, oh, a divorce might need to be on the cards, then, my love, that person is not for you. And I know things can change as well, of course, and that's, you know, really good to think through. But, I feel quite resistant about talking about divorce in marriage prep. And I don't want it to be a kind of like, oh, we're so excited, we're in love, we're going to get married. Like, you've got to think about it really seriously. And I think
but you're going to be miserable at some point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's hard work. You know, I say to my couples, like, and even in wedding services, sometimes the kind of love in the Bible is not the sort of Valentine's fluffy heart, kind of like doe-eyed, the rain starts pouring and the couple kiss. Like, that is not the work of love. It's patient. Like, it's self-control. It's full of stuff that we don't naturally have within us. And it's the stuff that doesn't come easily to us, but it's stubborn and it's unrelenting. And it's a tiny drop, it's a tiny reflection of the kind of love that God has for us. And that's why, like, it's insane how, like, the Bible uses its wedding imagery to talk about the way that God loves us, and it's passionate and fierce and, yeah, unmovable. And that's the stuff that I want to be like, yeah, this is what we're doing here today. And this tiny moment here was a reflection of that, the way that God loves God's people. And so, yeah, for me, I feel like, yeah, with that, divorce is off the cards. However, what I would always say to couples is, the church and I am here for you, not just in the prep, not just on the wedding day, but like for the life, you know, your days to come. And this church family will always be yours. They will always be praying for you. This is always a safe place to come back to remember and to pray and to ask and to receive from the God who blesses you in your marriage, not just today, but always. Because let's face it, a marriage between two people is difficult. A marriage between God with two people is... Well, I've found, anyway, in my short time of marriage, like, yeah, the only thing that's good. That sounds terrible. But it's I wouldn't be able to do it if, like, without my faith. Hope that doesn't sound too dramatic. Maybe that's an overshare. I better check with my spouse. That's important. Really important to me.
So we're having a little hint of what the music might be like for this very important wedding come up, and it's slightly questionable. But then we go to the vicarage and find out a bit more about what might be planning for the wedding. And Alice is working on the dress, and she initially suggests a nice pine that might be good, and then brings out a diagram that she's drawn that seems to have a very piratey themed outfit to the wedding day.
Yeah, and you know, at this point, I still, despite having watched this episode so many times, I always still at this point have relentless optimism that they are all, that their actual gift to Geraldine is causing her, like, there's always worry that she's going to have this terrible, eccentric wedding, but actually is going to be her dream wedding. Like, I have this hope I cling to at this point that Alice is just working Geraldine up.
Yeah. But she does listen, doesn't she? And she hears from Alice. She hears from Geraldine. Mm. Geraldine says, you know, I was looking for a white dress, and Alice is like, oh, I see, they're pretty, beautiful, all that kind of thing. Fine, boring, traditional. And Geraldine's like, yeah, probably should go for that. But, you know, I'll think about the beard is what she says. And then they have the conversation about who's going to do the wedding, because you can't do your own wedding. Mm. And Geraldine's decided on a friend from college called Jeremy. He's going to come and do the wedding. Jenny, how did you decide who was going to marry you?
Yeah, I kind of always knew who I would ask. So I chose my childhood vicar, basically, who actually now happens to be my archdeacon as well. So it's cool because I know him now in a kind of work professional capacity, but for a long time knew him as like the first person that, I don't know, reflected God in a way that really struck me. And I was like, wow, that person's like living a life I really want to, that I was impressed by, I suppose. And I was like, wow, you're living a really godly life. So yeah, I went back to my roots, I suppose, and went to my childhood vicar.
Aww.
When
we were deciding, both our dads are vicars, so we're like, oh, that's awkward, can we ask one and not the other? And then we just went, do you know what, the person who kicked all this off and made us get together, because she knew we both liked each other, should probably finish the job off. So Jenny did it for us. So we picked Jenny.
What a privilege. And that was my first wedding ever. So in the run-up, I was absolutely bricking it. But honestly, like, testament to the Lord we serve, like, felt so much peace on the day. It was just, oh my goodness, great. So happy. Yeah.
And you know what? From my desk here, on the wall is framed our order of service, on which there is a picture of me and my spouse, and it says Metalhead and Redshot, and there is a picture of Super Jenny riding a chicken. And what's
best
really lovely
order of service ever.
Is that order of service was drawn by Kate. So you are both on my
so
wall.
Love that. That is literally the best, best order ever.
Yeah, it's very good. Maybe that could be one of our pictures this week.
Should be, for sure.
So, Kate, if you were to ever get married, who do you think you would pick?
Okay. I mean, I have thought about this. Of course I've thought about this. It changes.
Yeah.
And I think it would depend very much on who I was getting married to and what their thoughts were. I think I've toyed with the idea of my dad taking the service and asking my brother to be the one who walks me down the aisle.
Sweet.
Because my dad does a cracking service. I think that would depend on what dad actually wanted.
My dad wanted to walk me down an aisle because I did wonder about asking him, but thought, no, he wants to be dad that day. Mm. And he gets the father of the bride speech anyway, so he can chat away then.
I've also thought about maybe asking one of my many friends. At the moment, I'd probably ask our dear friend Thomas. Just so that you two could actually be part of.
Well, me and Jenny could tag team. Be great.
I think it would very much depend. But then also, obviously, you know, I've got some fantastic colleagues, and I think it would depend so much on specifics at that time. I think any time I've imagined my own wedding, it's been quite a small affair, just generally. So I think I would want someone who would hold true to that. To keeping it small and intimate and low key. I'm not really a big fan of being the centre of attention and having a big party. Like, I've always, whenever I've thought about, like, I'm not even sure I'd want a proper reception, like, just kind of like tea in a park or something. You know, rather than a full disco or whatever. But again, it depends on what man I fall in love with, if I ever fall in love.
Sweet to think. Okay. Would you or did you invite your bishop?
I think we definitely mentioned it because, well, our bishop at the time was Archbishop Sentamu.
So he
was a little bit busy. So he did not come to the wedding, did you?
I did. I invited my diocesan and suffragan bishop. Unfortunately, they were both away. But I was like, hey, if you're around, come on down.
Oh, there you go.
What do you think, Kate?
If I were to get married here, I'd already have two bishops in attendance with my dad and there's a retired bishop who works in my benefice.
Too many bishops.
So, I mean, maybe I'd invite Bishop Richard. He's a nice guy. At the same time, my aspirations to small and intimate.
Have a bishop turn up.
If I had three bishops in attendance, that would be excessive.
I had
three bishops at my licensing service because of that.
There you go. Collecting them like Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
Although, those would be the shiny ones.
One thing I want to share is, just because I just remembered, Jenny, as you were talking about Ruthie's wedding being your first wedding, I need to share the biggest flub I've done recently. It was last month. A couple already know because I did own up to it. I forgot the preface. I didn't do the preface. I stood up to do my reflection and realised I haven't done the preface. So I put it in after I've done my reflection. But I was like, but it was, in my defence, it was a really, really, really hot day and the church was full.
You said it. It's all good.
If you squeezed it in there, wherever you get in, just get it in. I love it. I love the preface. And it's lovely, make me nerdy, but I do. I love it. Come back to it time and time again.
Well, let's start and get towards the preface in the wedding because outside we are now and Harry and Geraldine are walking and she's on her way to the thing that David and Hugo have planned, which is a night in Geraldine's honour. And they're busy talking about how this wedding's going to be a disaster and Harry encourages her to say, just tell them you want to plan it yourself. Mm. And that's what she's going to do at this meeting. And then they have a quick snog for courage. And then everyone comes up and starts asking questions while they're snogging, and Geraldine answers whilst they're snogging, and it's just...
It's groceries and chaos.
So we go to Horton Manor.
Wait, no, and... just before we go to Horton Manor, there's something which is revealed.
Oh, don't make us stay here.
Revealed through his questions, someone asked her about the service times. We've already known from their conversation they're getting married on Saturday, so he says, what are the services on Sunday? And there's just a hint that Geraldine, instead of going straight off to her honeymoon, is going to be working on Sunday.
Now, I rejected this out hand. I was like, no, I'm sure it was a covering vicar, and he was asking because he'd want to know if there was a change in time. But you both rightly said, well, actually, no, because at the end of the ep, she is in the vestry with Alice, as if she's done the Sunday services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surely Frank knows the service times by now and doesn't have to interrupt. Anyway, let's move to Horton Manor so we don't have to stay at this weird bit. And it's the evening that David and Hugo have planned, which is an evening in her honour. And what they're going to do is a This Is Your Life. And my question in all of this for this evening is, where was David in the planning of this? Okay, there's lots of things going on. He doesn't seem to have planned anything, because we see from This Is Your Life stuff that they mess it up completely. They bring out a woman who they say is Geraldine's mother, and Geraldine's mother has died years previously.
Which we know from Wind on the Weather.
Yes, and it's like, why, David, why didn't you do anything to help?
Do you know what? I think this comes into character growth. Just as David is stepping back from being super intense, super judgmental, super critical, super snotty, really, looking down his nose on everybody, so he's just chilled. He may not be in his pink shirts anymore, but nowadays he's like, ah, just sit back, guys, let the good times roll. I trust my friends in the village. Let them crack on.
Flawed. Very flawed.
You know, if we were being ungenerous to David, maybe he's trying to sabotage a wedding because he still in love with Geraldine.
That is a crazy which he scandalous does
admit,
claim.
He does admit that he still loves Geraldine in this episode.
Well, he doesn't say he loves her, but he does say that she was his perfect woman. Because this whole scene where they're doing the This Is Your Life that goes horribly wrong, and then there's a brilliant slideshow where they go through some of favourite slides, and Alice's favourite slide is literally a park slide confused about everything. It's a whole wrapping up of the series and everything that they've been through. They have these really interesting discussions with each other. And David, we see some of the slides of David right at the beginning, with his sign that says nothing sicker than a woman vicar, and women vicars are Satan's spawn or something like that. And David says this line about that he was just a bit uncertain at the beginning.
He's definitely mellowed, like, big time.
Yeah. And then the lights go out and they end up just talking round at candlelight, and they just talk about things and what they're looking for a partner, that Alice says this line about love actually is all around, which harks back to Kate.
Yes. So the writer or creator of The Vicar of Dibley is one Richard Curtis, who you'll know from films such as Four Weddings and a Funeral and Love Actually. And Love Actually was released in 2003. This episode of Vicar of Dibley was released in 2007. And I think it's a really nice nod to it. I don't think the episode itself was written by Richard Curtis. I think it has someone else as the writer in the credits.
Right.
I may be wrong. I'm sure Richard Curtis was involved in the episode, being the ostensibly last episode of A Vicar of Dibley. But I think it was a really nice little callback to another one of Richard Curtis's well-beloved works. And in this documentary I was watching last night about The Vicar of Dibley, there was this really interesting little factoid where Richard Curtis and one of his creative partners, they were saying that when they were planning Alice's wedding, they found it quite difficult because they'd done Four Weddings and a Funeral,
and therefore felt like they'd already done all the jokes about weddings. So I wonder if we see any of the outcome of that in this episode as well.
I'd be interested to now watch Four Weddings and a Funeral, having with you said that, and just go, have they like doubled up on anything? I can't remember. I've only watched Four Weddings and a Funeral once or twice, maybe.
Maybe we should do that for a future episode, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Ah, nice. And it gets to the end of the evening, and Geraldine's going to say her big thing about actually she wanted to plan her own wedding. And she gets emotionally manipulated by everyone because David steps in beforehand and says, you know, maybe we're a bit pushy with the wedding, but we wanted to show how much we loved you. Were we too pushy? Do you wish you planned it yourself? And she's like, no, it's fine. Well, it's clearly not fine. Why is she such a pushover?
I think Geraldine is full of love and chooses the great love that she has for parishioners over her own wants. And although, you know, that's never advisable, you can't sustain that all the time. I wouldn't go as far as to say emotionally manipulated, although, yeah, I know what you mean a bit, because they're all sitting there with their big doughy eyes looking at her, blinking quickly, going...
Under candlelight,
yeah, you're right. But I think in that moment she's like... I love you guys. I trust you. It will be chaos, but it will be lovable chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It's not ideal.
Yeah. And we move to the next day and we meet Jeremy, who's going to do the wedding at the vicarage. And he is played by Hugh Bonneville, who is a marvellous actor. And we hear some of the stories from college. I mean, he opens the door and says a line that has a repetition to it, so I'm sure that if I said to you two, God is good
all the time, God is good,
yeah, I mean, we do that kind of thing, opening the door, and it's all very inside jokey. And then we hear some of the nicknames that Geraldine had at theological college, and quite frankly they're rude.
Yeah, it's Jeremy talked about how she was called Noah's Ark by everyone in college because everyone wanted to board her, sometimes in twos. So, again, more factoids I learned from this documentary. The vicar who Geraldine is based on, his name is Joy, she trained at Cranmer Hall and was one of the first women to train for ordination through Cranmer Hall, which is where we trained at. And because it's our alma mater, we heard some of these stories of the first woman training in college, and I don't think it was a particularly I don't think it was always a particularly wholesome environment or welcoming environment necessarily. And I can just sort of see this, what Jeremy is describing, it feels really uncomfortably real.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that that sort of narrative would not have been allowed when we were training. I'm glad there's been some progress. Maybe Geraldine was in on the joke, but yeah.
I think she probably was, because she has got that flirty, naughty sense of humour as part of it. But fortunately, no one called us Noah's Ark at college, I believe. That was not a nickname. And while Jeremy is talking, Alice turns up with some more ideas for the wedding, and the first thing is, what's the first thing she brings out? I can't remember. Alice turns up with some more ideas for the wedding, and there's a questionable one, but then she brings out a lovely bouquet of flowers, doesn't she, Jenny?
Well, we think it's a lovely bouquet of flowers. I'm sure I think I watched a documentary, and I'm sure in the documentary it said, because what happens is Alice brings out the flowers and she goes, here is a bouquet to remind you that marriage is full of beauty. And Geraldine goes, oh, nice. And then she goes, and then it does this. And then she's like, and then you can do this. And she points the flowers at Geraldine, squirts her full in the face, and she gets like a plume of water. And she says it's so Geraldine can remind Harry that marriage is also full of surprises, which is very true. I'm pretty sure that Geraldine, so like Dawn French, didn't know that that was going to happen. I think she knew that the water was going to squirt, but she didn't expect it to go like directly in her face. So that was like, so that she didn't flinch just before it happened. So I think that's a little extra factoid, although, I might need to check my sources. But it was so, it was like so funny watching that scene back. She grabs the tissue and like scowls at Alice, like, what are you doing with those flowers next?
Amazing. And Geraldine decides she likes the flowers option because otherwise Alice is going to keep coming back with more. And then we go to the wedding rehearsal, and Jeremy's leading the wedding rehearsal. We don't think he's doing a very good job at it. I still don't understand why we find Harry Jasper Kennedy funny.
No, I don't.
If someone could explain that to us.
Is Jasper Kennedy somebody?
Is Jasper in was just in 2007 was Jasper an embarrassing middle name?
I've no idea.
So it's interesting that Jeremy is adamant that they must use every single middle name in the wedding vows, and he says this: "I need to know your full names for the wedding vows, for the paperwork." Yes, but he says it's for the wedding vows. I sent a little text to my go-to church history and legal matters expert, Bishop Dad, just because in my experience, I've never used middle names. And I thought, am I breaking the law by not using middle names? So I sent a little text to my dad, and I said, have we ever needed to use middle names in wedding vows? Or is this a TV fiction? Because you see that I think there's a Doctor Who episode where they worry about getting a middle name wrong when Rose's mum, they visit her wedding. Anyway, it's something you see a lot on TV. And the answer is no. We've never had to use, by law, legally, use the middle names in the marriage vows. And this is just something that it's interesting. Because obviously the joke is that Geraldine has a ridiculously large number of silly middle names. The writers seem to have forgotten is that Geraldine is one of Geraldine's middle names.
Yeah, her real name is Boadicea.
Yeah. So.
But it turns out the rehearsal, her full name, if we include Boadicea, is Boadicea Geraldine Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, Chim Chimney, Chim Chimney, Chim Chim Cheree, Granger.
Which Alice goes, oh.
Yeah, that's the name she likes.
Alice, isn't it?
You absolutely. Need a very good Alice impression.
Yeah, you do.
I've watched so much. It's literally within me. It's inside. Alice is just there.
So you don't have to do middle names at weddings, but you can do. And
can I just speak in defence for the middle names?
I do them as well, yes, sometimes.
I think it's really important to... Because say we didn't. Because at the end of the day, when Geraldine gets married, she elbows Jeremy, doesn't she? And so in the end, she gets married as Geraldine Julie. To save the embarrassment of the big old long name. And I think there's something... It's like, say my name's Jennifer Rebecca, my full name. But say if on my wedding day, I'm known as Gender. So I, Chris, take you, Gender, to be my wife. Doesn't sound the same as I, Joseph Christopher, take you, Jennifer Rebecca. There's something that's like, I take you as your true self, rather than like Jen and Chris. Chris. Do you know what I mean?
But I'm not suggesting nicknames. Like, so let's say I'm marrying a David and Elizabeth. Right?
Yeah. All right, okay. Not you, yourself.
I'd call them, I, David, take you, Elizabeth. I, Elizabeth, take you, David. I mean, unless a couple of have requested, like, actually, no one knows me by Elizabeth.
Yeah, or only
everyone knows me by Beth, or everyone knows me by my middle name. I think as long as it's formal, I think within reason.
Yeah.
I said this to a wedding couple once.
There's no legal requirement for the middle names or any level of levels of formality. So just go with what, as long as the paperwork's right.
That's the thing, because I before we recorded, I was like, yeah, but what about the legalities of making sure that everybody, wedding is a public service, everyone needs to know who's actually getting married, who and why there. But Kate, you said, well, actually, the legal stuff is obviously the paperwork. And when the witnesses sign, they can see the full name of the couple. therefore.
And the Banns of Marriage. So Banns of Marriage, I always use the full name for Banns of Marriage.
Yeah.
Because that's the legal thing, is does, you know, I published a Banns of Marriage between David and Horatio Bloggs of this parish and Elizabeth Francesca Jennings of this other parish. This is for the first time of asking.
Yeah. You do the full name then. I would have been tempted, if I was Geraldine, to have legally changed my name by this point.
Can we say that that's what she did? Because otherwise it's upsetting.
But why would she get rid of Boadicea and not all the other little names?
No, as in, I would have legally changed my name probably to, if I hate the Boadicea, well, maybe I'd move the Boadicea to Geraldine Boadicea Mary Granger, because then if it's all the Mary Poppins stuff that her mum loved,
that's so sweet.
It's incumbent. There we go.
Oh, that's really thoughtful of you.
Thanks.
That's a lovely way of doing it.
So the rehearsal.
I imagine because her mother has passed away, that's why she hasn't changed
her
name. Yeah.
Sweet.
But there is that question of where did Boadicea go? And the answer is the writers forgot.
I don't know.
Totally forgot. They needed us. I'm guessing
my pronouncement that we know that her mum is dead from the winter and the weather. Because instead, didn't Geraldine say that she'd like to be on ashes, in a jar of ashes on her mum's mantelpiece?
She did, yeah, she did say that, but that's an error as well. Because she's been dead for 8 years by the stage of the Knight in Her Honour, hasn't she?
Awesome. And maybe, actually, no, so maybe Winter and the Weather was more than 8 years ago. Well, that's sad. That means Geraldine's mum died while she was in post and none of her parishioners knew.
Neither did we.
Oh my goodness, that's tragic.
I just realised, as the viewers, we also are Geraldine's parishioners.
Yeah.
Whoa! We're like her real parishioners, nice. Really, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
We've all been pastored by Geraldine. That's so true. And that's why her influence has been so great on my life, maybe.
Yeah. There you go.
I've been a disciple of Geraldine.
Yes, okay, let's...
All this time. Sorry, my mind is just exploding.
Okay, let's
carry on. I'm just going to take a moment.
Let's go to, it's the night before the wedding, and Geraldine and Harry are having a bit of a heart-to-heart at the vicarage, and she's wearing these beautiful silk rose PJs, and he says that they're his favourite, and they're having this lovely heart-to-heart about actually how they've helped each other to see life in a new way. And Geraldine talks about not being lonely anymore, and she didn't even realise that, but actually she knows with Harry that she will have a fuller life that she didn't realise she wanted. And it's really lovely and it's really beautiful, but Geraldine can't help but make jokes about her wonderful baps and things like that, which I completely get, because I am also a fan of the self-deprecating humour and can't take compliments without insulting myself as well. But it's, yeah, we just wish she could be a bit vulnerable without making any jokes.
Yeah, at the very least with Harry. But the way Harry handles it is really lovely. Like, he doesn't give in to her self-deprecation, and he doesn't let her deflect vulnerability with humour.
Yeah.
Which is just, that's really lovely. So they say goodnight because they are separating before the wedding.
Yes.
And Geraldine says, right, I've got to go get my beauty sleep, because if tomorrow is going to be the greatest catastrophe of the century,
she said cock up.
I can't remember what the exact wording was. then I need to be wide awake to witness it.
Yeah, absolutely.
She goes towards the stairs, turns off the lights, and there's nothing. She only goes to the door because she thinks this is Harry.
Again, for more snogging.
She has made some progress.
Yeah.
But it's not Harry. It is Owen. And then it's Jim. And then it's Jeremy. Much like the three temptations that Jesus faced in the desert.
They all appear the day before the wedding to ask her to marry him. Marry him, them. Hims, them, all of them. And why? Stop.
It's something which I think this at this point in the episode I got legitimately angry. Not necessarily because I felt it wasn't funny, but more the message that it's sending. I was already a bit annoyed by the fact that they'd never contradicted the statement that because she's getting married, she won't be giving the same amount of attention to the parish. But it's kind of the insinuation is that because she is a female clergy person, it is natural and expected that members of her parish will fall in love with her.
Yeah.
And that's just a matter of fact. That's a side effect of having female clergy. And I know it's for laughs, and I know, you know, it's fiction, but at the same time, it does make me quite annoyed.
Yeah. Frustrated. I would like to ask you, if the person marrying you appeared at the door the night before your wedding, declaring their love and asking you to marry them instead, would you then let them do the wedding the next day?
I don't think you have much choice because of licensing. So in terms of a visiting clergy person, well, actually, if you are the vicar, then if you are the vicar, then you can, and you know there will be other clergy, then you can ask one of those other clergy to take the service. But if there are not going to be any other clergy present, or if you are not the vicar, then you are very limited in your choices of who, because, right, so if someone is not the vicar of the parish and you want them to take your wedding or any service, they have to get permission from whoever is the vicar of that parish.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll also need to get permission from the bishop if they're coming from a different diocese or province. So if I've been asked to go and take a burial of ashes in Wales, I have to go kind of to the parish priest and then to the bishop's office in order to make sure it's all okay for me to take a service, someone that I'm not licensed to do so. Mm. So, in many ways, Jeremy has backed Geraldine into a corner here, because...
Yeah.
What
I would hope
do?
Some of the other clergy who turn up at the church are within the diocese, and therefore, yeah, I would... Mm. Yeah. If Jenny had come to my door the night before I got married and said, don't marry them, marry me instead, what would I have done?
I think I would have asked the parish priest.
Pardon?
You would have asked the parish priest to take the wedding instead if they were available.
Yeah. Or Gretna Green, Jenny.
I think that's the thing. I think how Geraldine handles it is really good, because he says, can I detect hesitations? And yes, escaping. And she goes, no, get off your knees, you dopey diddly, is escaping. Like, she does make it into a joke, which I think is really good, so he's not embarrassed. And also she makes it really clear it's a big old no. But to be fair, he doesn't really quit, does he?
No, and we see that at the wedding, which is the next day. So she finally gets to bed. Doesn't sleep very well because she was so excited. Mm-hmm. And it's the morning of the wedding. Alice has come to wake her up. And Alice has turned up in her bridesmaid outfit, which is a full replica of the outfit worn by Doctor Who, as portrayed by David Tennant. And it is a fabulous look. I love it. And they sit on the sofa and Alice hands over the dress and says, I really hope you like it. And Geraldine says, oh, what time is it? And how long to the service? And Alice says, 5 minutes. I'll just go put the kettle on. And Geraldine explodes with rage. Yeah. About 5 minutes. You should have thought. Da-da-da-da. I want to know why Geraldine didn't set an alarm herself.
It's her own fault. She should not be complaining at Alice. Surely Geraldine has access to an alarm
to do her job and her life.
She has clocks in the house.
Yeah.
But she didn't know what to set them for.
She knows the time of the wedding.
No, she doesn't know the time of the wedding. She doesn't know anything, remember? It's all been
planned. She does know the time of the wedding. She's the one who books the wedding.
Somewhere between 9 and 6. That's the legals.
That's an interesting theory that she didn't actually know the time.
Could have been 11, could have been 12, could have been 2, could have been 4. Could have been 5:30 p.m.
She's the one who booked the wedding.
No, she doesn't know anything.
They plan everything. That's an interesting theory.
Thank you. That solves the
alarm clock.
It's the truth.
But I would have assumed she would know.
Why are you slandering Geraldine at this late stage? She's just about to get married. Why are you picking on her for not setting an alarm?
Because...
She should have set an alarm.
And anyway, if Jeremy was any competent at doing rehearsals, he would have made sure to double check at the rehearsal. The wedding time is at this time. I'm expecting you, the groom, to be at the church by this point. I'm expecting the bride to be here at this point. I always give timings. Am I just like some draconian?
No, I give timings as well.
Yeah, you are right.
We've already seen that Jeremy's done it.
Let's just slander Jeremy for a bit so that we can give Geraldine some time off. Jeremy says that he's married 300 couples and only 5 have divorced.
And one murder.
I cannot believe for someone who's done that many weddings that you could be so incompetent at actually doing weddings.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he has ulterior motives, doesn't he? But before we get to Jeremy at the wedding, Geraldine goes upstairs to put her dress on and hopes she doesn't look like Christopher Biggins, which she doesn't, thank goodness, because she comes down the stairs.
Yeah. And bride.
So beautiful, such a wonderful dress. It's like this, it's got like it's like a shift dress underneath, and then there's like this cloak with this hood, and it looks quite elven to me.
I think it's like Arwen, isn't it?
It's so beautiful, and I love it so much, and it's wonderful. And it turns out there are accessories to it as well, and there's a beard and a headdress. But Geraldine very quickly manages to get rid of the beard and the headdress, thank goodness. And then David has appeared because David's going to walk her down the aisle, it would seem. And they've got her a car, despite the church being next door. And Owen's driving the car. She stands there. The car drives up and splash, goes through a puddle, covers her dress head to toe in mud. And this bit makes me so angry with the writers. How dare they? Just, we know the rest of the wedding is going to be chaos. Could they not have given her just this beautiful dress? And it... it makes... every time I get so cross at it. Like,
If they really wanted Geraldine to be in her pyjamas, which actually is lovely because they have an outfit that Harry really loves on her. You know, I'm not too angry about the pyjamas. I'm angry that the dress is destroyed.
Yes.
But the pyjamas are not a bad second choice.
Agreed.
If they were that keen to have her in her pyjamas, then what they should have done was have Alice produces some monstrosity, which unfortunately is destroyed. And Geraldine says, oh, it looks like I'll just have to wear my lovely pyjamas that my fiancé loves instead. Like that. Mm.
Yes.
Would have been better. Instead of giving her this beautiful outfit and then destroying it immediately.
It's so sad.
Every time. But yes, she does go for a second outfit, which is pyjamas, which are these lovely silk rose pyjamas. And I think they could have been a brilliant wedding outfit. And she's got a rose in her hair and it's beautiful. But she wears her slippers. I just think, wear a nice pair of shoes. And everyone would think, she's gone for a silk pantsuit. What a star. But she wears lovely slippers.
So let us remind you, it is all about your accessories.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we go to the church ready for the wedding. And it's decorated beautifully, I think, with all these wonderful arches. But they're covered in vegetables as opposed to flowers. But it's stunning. And it turns out that the other bridesmaids are dressed as Daleks. And all the little boutonnieres are cabbages. And it looks really lovely. I think it's great. And then we come to the service itself. And Kate, take us away with the liturgy.
You know exactly what I did. Yeah. I spotted in the rehearsal that Jeremy was holding the cream Common Worship Marriage Service booklet. However, he is not using the Common Worship Service. He's using the Book of Common Prayer Service. And that makes me irrationally angry because they could just have him holding a Book of Common Prayer.
But I think the reason this is because Common Worship is copyright and Book of Common Prayer is not. That is my theory. Although it really annoys me that he has a Common Worship booklet, but he's using the Book of Common Prayer words. It just really annoys me.
That explains a lot.
Well done, Hinton, for having it memorised, but then also the marriage service is completely out of order and heavily truncated. He's doing exchange of rings before the vows. There's no prayers and no blessing. And obviously this is because it's for TV and they can't actually do a full wedding service. And also they don't want to be accused of accidentally marrying anyone. Although you can't, because it's all about intention, not the words. Anyway, I did do a bit of a check to see whether the BCP service was in the Queen booklet, and it isn't.
Ugh. Typical. But we do see lots of lovely bits of the service, and it turns out that Jim's song about divorce is actually really nice in the end, except they call Harry a total prick at the end of it. and we've got a whole bunch of clergy there in their pastels, female clergy in their pastels. I should clarify that because, you know, there are some male clergy as well. And it irritates me because why are all the clergy in pastels? But they help put Jeremy on the straight and narrow when he keeps trying to marry Geraldine instead.
But Jeremy,
I hate him so much. I hate him.
Ugh. I should have included him in our snog marry Holy Ghost.
I was just going to say, if only he had made an appearance.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked about this service is that Geraldine says all her vows and we hear her say all of that, because the having a life partner has been really important for her and her journey. And I love that we get to hear her say, this is the person who I'm going to love, honour and protect, and all the vows. So that's great. And so they get married. Hooray!
Yay!
Interesting thing about the vows. I'm really sorry to put this in, but despite it being Book of Common Prayer, she's still on its obey.
Yes, good.
Which is, you know, not an option in Book of Common Prayer, but there we go.
No, just fudge it, it'll be fine.
I was going to say, they fudged everything else.
They fudged everything else. And they're married, and it's lovely, and they're leaving church, and then Geraldine lies.
Yeah, it's a bit like Greece, isn't it?
Alice before then, though.
Yeah, she does. She snogs various people down the aisle. I kind of wish the confetti cannons had gone off at this point as opposed to her walking down the aisle. But,
true.
The flying bit is a bit weird.
Is this a link to Greece? You know the film Greece?
I feel like it's a bit like Greece,
Yeah.
We go together.
My interpretation of this is, because I like to think that Geraldine did actually have a nice wedding, is that all of this is just her disaster anxiety dream of what the wedding was going to be like, and kind of everything bad that could have happened in terms of being woken up late and having her dress destroyed and Jeremy interfering with the wedding and trying to make it so that he was marrying her instead. Like, I think for me, the way I choose to believe that this is a disaster dream, and actually what we don't see is her then waking up and actually having a nice calm wedding with Harry.
A lovely theory of whether that actually happens. I suspect the chaos actually ensued.
Yeah, maybe she passes out and that's why we're
that's why she flies.
That would kill me, though, never knowing how it actually went. Oh. So as touching as that thought is, I can't bear to consider it any longer because I would need to know.
Yeah. And then the episode itself ends with a montage of kind of behind the scenes for this episode and previous episodes, and seeing the actors on set and all this kind of thing. And it is a really rounding up of the whole series and the whole shebang of Vicar of Dibley. And we have the final joke that I want to talk about because I love it so much. So it's the classic thing of Geraldine telling a joke and Alice doesn't get it. And then Harry's in the room and explains it to Alice and, you know, uses words like it's a play on words of the noun, ahead, and the adverb, ahead. And Alice absolutely wets herself so with good. Laughter. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great way, chef's kiss way to end all the jokes of the series, I think.
Yeah,
totally.
And then Harry says, now can we go on our honeymoon? Further yeah. evidence that Geraldine worked for Sunday after her wedding.
Oh.
Oh dear.
So we've made it. Geraldine's got married.
Oh, well done, Geraldine.
Yeah, and it's the kind of end of her story arc of romance for Dibley. Yeah. And we do have episodes later on that happen as kind of comic relief. But this is the end of the series. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, guys, here we are, the end of the series.
So we're going to do an episode soon where we kind of talk about these two episodes and a series review of series 5. But for now, we'll leave it with Geraldine flying off into the distance with her handsome Harry. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Vicars Watch Dibley. Thank you to Toby for editing our ramblings.
Any views expressed in this podcast are our own and don't necessarily represent those of the Church of England or any other organisations with which we are affiliated.
And as always, bless you for listening.
What do you call two birds in love?
Lovebirds.
Sweethearts.
Oh, nice.